to Las Vegas Cocktail Weekly. Me, Adam Reyes. This is an extra special episode because we talked to some of the best bartenders in Las Vegas at the Bowl's Best Bartender in Las Vegas competition. We also talked to Elaine Higgins from Remy about their new Eau de Vie. We do some Las Vegas news with Heidi Rains. We drink beer, we drink cocktails, and talk about our love for the craft. This time things stay tuned. Starting new, rearranging. I got a new girl I'm seeing, just like the last one, just like the first one. A letter to the editor. I don't like to drink. As an alcoholic, I'm a total washout. Growing up a native in Vegas during the 80s and 90s, I wasn't subjugated to Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra. The Rat Pack era of sophisticated beveraging. This was for old people. A gin martini pre-dinner, wine pairings with a five-course meal, share your cognac by a fireplace in a dressing robe. None of that screams Vegas.
Las Vegas retreat today.
What happens here?
You're lucky to remember it at all.
Traveling more than a bit than I'm apt to do. I drink in other cities, and I was blessed to be handheld by a New York loco. I was shown the magic of social liquid lubrication and all its finest swagger. Into the bowels of unmarked basement lounges, midtown whiskey barrels, and meatpacking distilleries. We drank our way through Manhattan. Gone with the NyQuil, Jaeger Bomb embalmments, the Laffy Taffy Jello shots, and the frozen bottom shelf sugar water. Here I learned that the object of a true oral watering hole is not to get plastered and stumble up the strip without shoes. A true cocktail is the embodiment of alchemy. A tincture for the rose face belly warmth. A chilled shot for serious conversations. And the herbalist approach to relaxation. Speak of medicine men and the deflowering of righteousness. It's pulling a drain plug after a day of upward inertia that too often feels like a crap-coated hamster wheel. This is the grand entrance to the culture. That moment when Peter steps away from the pearly gates, punches his time card, and sits down at the Eternal Supper Tavern. Where the gods and goddesses collect their tumblers of ambrosia, where water and wine are the same thing. This, to my delight, can be found in Vegas. I'm waxing on, I know, but I am smitten by the new apothecary of muddled spices, absinthe waterfalls, eyedropper kisses. Mixologist inspires to cure all that ails me, or at least help me forget the laundry list. There are so many ways of living intoxication, and I plan on exploring them, as if time is really just a game of chance. I'm just lucky I didn't know this in my 20s. So like I said, that was a letter to the editor from Martini Neophyte. So Martini, if you're out there, please write back again. So anyway, let's get into the show.
How's it going? It's another episode of Las Vegas Cocktail Weekly. I'm here with Ralph Ari of Mixology Made Simple.
What's up?
And Daniel Keaveney from Caesars Entertainment.
I'm here too. What's up?
And of course, I'm Adam Reigns. Raul, what's been going on with Mixology Made Simple?
With Mixology Made Simple, we have been trying to get back on track with the Gaz cocktails. I want to make sure we can keep on track. We're going to be doing, in maybe 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, we're going to be doing the Artillery Punch. We're going to have a big party here. We'll have video of it and put that online, and we're going to make a big punch and teach people about punch.
Nice. The five-finger punch. Five ingredients. Or more. Whatever.
It's a little more than five. It's going to be a fun day.
Because it comes from what? The Hindu word of that means five, right?
Yeah. Punch or something like that. It's five. Yeah.
I read it somewhere.
Yep.
Some bar smarts material.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Some Dave Wondrick punch wisdom.
Oh, I heard that before, too.
And Daniel, you just competed, right, in the Best Bartender in Vegas.
Las Vegas 7 magazine. It went pretty good. It was a good, well-rounded competition for bartenders. Kind of short on the number of people that went there, but as far as what they tested and creativity, speed, it was an all-around good competition. The people that are making it to the final round really deserve to be there.
But so you got fifth, right?
Fifth place.
Fifth is still good for your first time.
First time. Ever. I've never really thought about doing a competition before. I didn't know what it was all about. I kind of showed up just to take a look at it. And, of course, all of the other bartender friends of mine said, come on, Dan, just do it. You know, what do you have to lose? Why not? You know, and that's what happened. I ended up placing fifth in the whole thing.
See, that's awesome. That's awesome. You didn't even register anything, right?
No. All the other contestants got, you know, a week or two to study the drinks, study the rules, and I got about 10 minutes before I went on stage, so.
And so how did it work? Was there, like, what did they test on?
The first one was a 25, 30 question test, written test, just all different kinds of knowledge about, you know, who people are, what kind of spirits are, flavors and different things. So the top 10 test scores moved on to the second round. The second round was a speed test. And during the speed test, they gave you 5 cocktails that they wanted you to make off their cocktail list. And you got to just bang them out, do them nice, quick, clean. They judged on sanitation on top of that.
Health department's crazy.
Oh, in this town, it is absolutely
always
horrendous.
Been, especially after the Firefly.
Oh, yeah, of course. They're reopening, too.
Are they?
Yeah, they have a new place reopening right down the street from their old place. Anyways, so they did that. Then they did a free pour test. They gave you 4 cocktails to free pour without the mixer, just the spirits, to see how close you were on that.
So would they test you in a like test tube, like pour an ounce and a half, pour a half ounce?
Well, they gave you
they just gave you the recipe.
They gave you measured. They said pour sidecar. The liquor's in the sidecar, and you poured them into a tin, and then they measured the liquor inside
the
tin. Yeah, the total volume of the tin. So, you know, all the different. If it was a three liquor drink and called for 2.5 ounces, then you need to pour 2.5 ounces of liquor in there. So. That was pretty cool. And then after that, it was a creativity round where they just opened up the alchemy room to your fingers.
What'd you do?
I did, of course, you had to use the Bowles products. I did the Bowles Barrel Aged Genevieve.
Okay.
And I mixed that with a half ounce of vanilla syrup, orange juice, and I cooked a bar spoon of sugar to make a caramel effect and stirred that into it.
Little crack effect.
Yeah, and that's
heroin.
Yeah.
And I got the judges on that too. They started cracking up and laughing and really liking me on that too. So, stirred that right in, and as soon as I put the bar spoon in there, it sizzled. So
crack smokers drink.
Yeah,
simple,
absolutely.
I'm stealing that one.
So I shook the shit out of it and poured it out, and it tasted good. Never made it before in my life. Just kind of did my fingers into it.
Right on.
So.
So overall, doing the competition was a positive thing, as Raul always says.
Yes, competitions always make you better.
It was a positive thing. If there was one drawback, it was the number of contestants. There were only 10 of us there, so clearly it doesn't give a good cross-section of the best bartender in Las Vegas. However, the competition itself, if there were 100 people there, it would have been a great competition. It really would have given a good cross-section of what's out there.
Or maybe next year they should probably do it throughout the week.
Yeah.
Like make appointments
right.
to come in and do it.
Yeah,
you know
great
I mean?
Idea,
and have it available there.
Yeah.
It'd probably be better.
Videotape.
From like from 2 to 3. Because I'm sure the people at Wards have lives. You know, they can't just sit around all day waiting for people to show up. But they could say, okay, from this week, you know, come in from 3 to 5, come in, take your test, do your things, and then we'll rate your scores. Instead of saying, oh, we're going to cut you after the education round or whatever, to let them go through the whole motions and then rate them and then, you know, declare the winner after the next week.
Yeah, that is a great idea.
That way everybody gets a chance. You know, I'm off Friday, I'm off Saturday, whatever. They can all, everybody can go.
Right.
If you're trying to find, really find the best Las Vegas bartender, you know, they might have Friday off.
I don't know. That's a great point. Because if you are the best bartender, you are theoretically at your bar.
Yeah.
And you have to work. You didn't call in sick.
With these guys who don't love you the way that I do.
For me, I've just been working at the Poob. I'm winding down my stay at B&B. I've been doing a few more shifts.
Gonna bring an Italian tear to your eye?
It is, man. It's bittersweet. Although I'm tired of working two jobs, I do love that spot. I love the chefs. I love what they do. I love that they back us up behind the bar, all the ingredients we can play with. But it's still... You gotta go with, you know, that's $17 an hour as a union employee, pension, all that. I sound, now that I have two kids, I feel like, finally feel like an adult, and I'm starting making adult decisions. What's that?
You got more people to look after than just yourself now.
Yeah.
I mean, I never thought I'd say that myself, but with a 2-year-old, I'm saying that.
I feel you guys, trust me.
Crazy. But, other opportunities. I'll be writing at the Las Vegas, or for the Las Vegas Food and Beverage for the Professional. The first, I'll be in the July issue. The first article is just about, essentially, don't be a douche behind the bar.
Yeah.
Essentially. And, you know, you can dissect
tough rule
that
to follow for some in this town.
Plenty of people need that.
Right, right. Like, I think we all need a reality check. Not that anyone's going to read that needs a reality check.
Yeah,
shit,
right.
I know I can be sometimes.
So I think we're going to go into our first section right now.
Mystery Cocktail. This week's mystery cocktail originates from the city of Nolens, in a place that David Wondrich said had started life as a simple coffeehouse and metastasized into a fantastic combination of auction house, eatery, and drinking resort. Also, apparently gumbo was invented there, as well as the free lunch. This particular libation is one that nearly every bartender has heard of, but far fewer have actually made.
Back to the slums, back to the block.
It was just published online.
Oh yeah, published on Mixology Made
You can go
Simple.
Go to mixologymadesimple.com and read all about Le Sauvage.
Yeah, we made it savage because Pascal, he's a sommelier, Pascal Belduc, he's a sommelier at B&B. Because I was just playing around actually at the pub with it, you know, because we have tarragon there and we really played around with tarragon. Just gin, tarragon, Pernod rinse, Meyer lemon juice,
stretched out soda.
Sort of, you know, Corpse Reviver number 2 kind of flavor profiles, but then. He said, you know, add some chicken stock. He gave me that idea. And Pascal Badou.
Okay.
He's like, that's what made it savage. Le Sauvage. Because he's French. But yeah, but it does that. Chicken stock adds that little umami flavor, kind of coats the palate. Mm-hmm. You know, the freshness of the lemon acidity and all that worked really nicely. So I like it. You know, I haven't made one in a while. We're going to make one maybe tomorrow. Now watch me skyrocket. Watch it.
Next up, the news with Heidi Rains.
The Wild West Midwest meets science fiction at Boiler Room. Celebrity chef Rick Moonen brings redefined comfort food and craft cocktails as a more casual dining option to Mandalay Bay with his new steampunk-inspired restaurant, which opened over 4th of July weekend, replacing his former RMC Food at Mandalay Place. With more than 50 different bitters, house-made tinctures, extracts, and infusion, the cocktail program matches the ambition of the bacon-wrapped bacon on the menu.
Yeah, you know who's at the Boiler Room.
We have an inn at the Boiler Room, yo.
Yes, Eric Hobby.
Higgity Hobby.
Higgity
Hobby. No one calls him that, so.
Yeah.
If you go in looking for him and you call him that, they won't know.
No, Eric says it's an awesome place, awesome cocktails. Vegas needs another cocktail mecca. Another great cocktail bar on the Strip because there aren't enough. Obviously, Nate Green, who runs the program, he said he's going to be on our program.
He said that?
He said he would grant me an interview.
Wow, he better put his money where his mouth is.
We will see. No, yeah, it'll be, I think in the next couple of weeks we'll get an interview for him.
Okay, great.
And then by the time I air it, it'll be like next year.
But. Sure, of course.
Because I really get things done fast.
You do. You really are fastidious with almost everything in life.
Yes, and along with the next topic.
Yeah, next topic is Chicago's loss is Las Vegas' gain as Craig Schottler prepares to become Aria's new property mixologist, expanding his resume, which already boasts former executive chef of the Aviary Cocktails Lab, beverage director at Merlin Hotel Drum Bar. At 26, he's built a solid reputation in the industry for an encyclopedic knowledge of classic cocktails and how to tweak them. A clever use of liquid nitrogen tanks, immersion circulators, vac spots, whoozy whatsies, whatnot what have yous, chingaderas, and what?
Wow, you really know your stuff, huh?
Yeah.
Whoozy whatsies. That, you know, you can really make some great cocktails with whoozy whatsies.
Right. Well, it's a little known secret.
Yeah, the Aviary in Chicago, very, very famous.
Filled with birds, essentially.
Yes.
And by birds, I mean young, hot women. So that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the guy, I heard there was some drama. I don't want to cause any drama or waves, but I heard there was on how he left the Aviary. It was
Ooh.
A little bit of... Little bit something.
Did he give it? Did he give him the bird?
Oh man! So well. Anyway, hopefully we can get him on the podcast sometime when we're talking.
Yeah,
sounds
definitely.
Awesome.
I think he's on his way over right now. This just in: breaking news, if you will. A certain cocktail waitress, Heidi Raines, myself, is back to work and hitting the streets downtown on Fremont. No, just kidding. That was my other job.
I thought you were. I thought you were singing. Singing, taking it to the streets.
Taking it to the streets. No, I am not Michael McDonald. Is that him?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, breaking news. I'm back to work. And it correlates to this entire podcast because I am a cocktail waitress.
Yes. But so where are you working? In case people want to come up.
I work in a cocktail lounge known as Fiamma. It's a fine dining Italian restaurant at MGM. Come check us out. Actually, it's super awesome. Our bartenders, John Clare, Carrie Wald, win awards. Cocktail related. Our cocktail menu is awesome. It's pretty amazing, actually. And I serve drinks and food in there, and I'm basically tips on toast.
So I'm going to have to come in and see you guys, because whenever I go in there, I drink wine, and I want to try it, because I have a Reale Extra, this great IPA from Lazio, Italian. Unfiltered Sasson wild yeast. Love that beer.
We have a massive Italian beer menu. It's huge. see. It have everything. I don't know what's on it, but there's a lot.
I'm learning.
Yeah, really.
But that's awesome. Yeah, I gotta come check you out.
Yeah, you should.
Next, we taste some cocktails from Gaz Regan's Joy of Mixology.
Let's talk about this apricot fizz that we just filmed.
Yes, let's talk about it.
So, not anything too mind blowing. Definitely not. I mean, it's in his book, and Gaz Regan knows his stuff. So there's a place for every cocktail. Where is the place for this cocktail?
A nursing home. Maybe. I would say it's definitely a, you know,
floppy hat.
You're playing Canasta,
old lady
in a fucking retirement community in Florida somewhere.
I could see it. You know, even a little polo. You know, if you throw a sprig or something in there, a little.
It's just a little basic. There's not a lot happening in there.
And what number cocktail is this?
This is number 15.
Number 15, the apricot fizz is apricot brandy, lemon juice, and sparkling water, right?
That's it. Yeah, soda.
Yeah, refreshing. Yeah, it's I am not a huge fan. I probably wouldn't order it again, even though I didn't order it right now.
It's not a super sweet cocktail though either, so
it's not, but it's got it's like a residual flavor. Sugar in there that, yeah. Just I don't know, it just, I mean, you know, Hiram Walker's pretty standard. It is what it is, you know. It's pretty much a nuts and bolts type of spirit or a liqueur. I don't know. I just feel like it needs more lemon or more citrus or something else to make it great. But it is, like I said, it's in there. It's a classic, you know, member of the sours family, I believe is what he classified it as.
Yeah, garnish it with an herb. I think like tarragon would be tarragon to add a little anise
rosemary,
flavor.
Anything,
rosemary,
really.
Yeah, it would be. And it would set it off.
But what are you going to put it in? You know, are you going to put it in the syrup? There's no syrup in it. It's just...
I'm just saying fresh on top.
Just
beat
for
it
the aromatics
up.
Of it.
Just the aromatics, because that could be all you need just to...
True. I mean, I'm drinking it. You know. I mean, it's hot. It's like 500 degrees in this fucking garage, you know, and it's helping.
But. We are here in beautiful, sunny Las Vegas right now.
114 today, I think it was.
Yeah. A cool 114 degrees.
It's a dry heat, though.
Yeah.
Dry, miserable heat.
Dry.
I love it. I actually enjoy the heat.
I like it better than where we're from.
Yeah.
You guys are
Daniel and I
assholes.
Are both from Massachusetts, indeed.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I worked in downtown Boston for years with a fish market right behind us, and 98 degrees with 98% humidity, and
yes.
That good old fresh fish right behind there didn't really smell so fresh at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Wow, is it? Who's going to say it first? Wicked hot. Or something like that.
You
fucking
the person not from Massachusetts, of course.
Come on, just say, park the car in Harvard Yard.
No, I'll never do that. I'm not fucking retarded.
You wicked smart.
Next, another hit. To our mystery cocktail. The second hint for the mystery cocktail. The decade of the 1850s was apparently a hell of a time. And it brought us this early evolution of excellence. It uses a great base distillate that is highlighted by a newer concept in drink making at the time, the simple syrup, along with a touch of fruit juice, and it is rounded out by a couple of specialty liqueurs. It has been said that Joseph Santini created the absolute pinnacle of the 19th century bartender art with this cocktail.
Mm. recorded with is the Apricot Sour, another drink from the Joy Mixology. How you guys like it?
It's better than the fizz, that's for sure. The more lemon, that's what I need. More lemon and less of the apricot. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not quite like the Amaretto Sour. Amaretto Sour is beautiful, but the Serrano is beautiful. You know,
absolutely. Yeah, this definitely lacks like the complexity, you know, of like
yeah, it's definitely
like if you've had like a good amaretto sour, you know, like it's. I don't like this cocktail at all, actually. But it's probably just because I've been drinking artificially flavored.
I like
Coke Zero right
cold,
before
the,
this.
The fresh lemon that comes from. I like it.
For what it is, for this,
yeah, exactly. Because
this almost has like kind of a weird perfumey thing going on, you know what I mean? Like here, I didn't even taste it without it.
Yeah, I did.
Well, let's do a brandy tasting.
Yeah, yeah.
Apricot brandy.
I fucking hear Walker. Hear Walker. Fucking apricot brandy tasting. Only the finest sommeliers will indulge.
Yeah, it's floral. It's weird.
Perfumey, right?
It's like some very perfumey. Yeah, it's almost like it's not like you don't think apricot.
No,
it's not my first thing when I. Drink this apricot brandy. I don't really think apricot. I mean,
but that's the Di Serrano. That's what they're made from is fucking apricot kernels. You know?
Right.
They don't even use fucking almonds.
Very true. Yeah, right,
so,
right.
Yeah.
It's not that... it's not too bad, actually, on the palate. Mm. Sweet, obviously. Sweet, fruity, almost.
Yeah, it just definitely leaves a... like a... fructosey type of like a, you know, in the back of your tongue, you know what I'm saying? It sticks with you a little bit. Whereas when we did the Di Serrano, the Amaretto Sour, you taste it was clean, crisp, like, just fucking went away when
sumptuous.
It needed to, you know what I mean? It didn't
yeah.
overstay its welcome. It was just like, oh yeah, you wanted to get back in there and taste it, you know? It was a perfect blend of sweet and tart. This is
It's definitely drinkable. It's
yeah.
Not,
oh yeah.
I mean,
I wouldn't fucking send it back. You know, but I wouldn't also order an apricot sour. No offense. But it's good that we know what this is as bartenders. We go and we dig up these guys and see what they're all about. Because then maybe what could fix it? How about that? What would fix it? What if we fucking did a little bit of that? What if we threw some of that shit in there? Let's see what happens. Some orange bitters.
Orange bitters.
Let's see what happens.
And then, funny enough, I was gonna say. What would fix it? Oh, a little bit of seltzer. And then we go back to the cocktail that
yeah.
we just made.
Yeah. Did I change it?
A little bit. I made it less fructosey, a little more tart.
That is better.
Better getting there. We're getting there.
Yeah, maybe something... Ooh, some gin?
An actual spirit.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Hey,
now
we're
at a heater. So you get
you
know, Juniper Ford, London Dry, gin.
A little too much there, huh?
I think I glugged a little too much out of my fucking my handle of beef eater.
Yeah, because then now on the nose you just get
burned.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't shake it either, so we didn't get the added dilution in the
we're,
water.
We're just adding shit to it now.
Yeah, but that is like the reason why you go back and you look at these old ones. Like, so let's say you got a beef eater comp. And it's one of those, hey, like you said, blind box, fucking, here's a bunch of shit, make something. You're like, oh, hey, if I did that, it's apricot and then this and that or whatever. Or what if somebody gave you apricot brandy and said, make magic. What are you going to do? You know, so it is good to reevaluate or revisit these old fucking old lady drinks.
Definitely. And then tasting is everything, you know, because you can imagine
that
what it tastes like.
Yeah, this needs to be shaken and needs more sweet now. Because, like, I literally glugged out probably about 2 ounces
yeah,
of fucking gin
at least.
In this thing. So
yeah.
Yeah, and maybe something for the texture, even like a dash of pineapple or something.
See?
Say,
see how
yeah.
we add the layer so,
yeah.
right? You know?
Yeah.
Look how far away we're going from that cocktail.
Right. Right. Right.
So, we got to visit a building block of a cocktail, right? So.
Beautiful.
So now some highlights from the Bowl's Best Bartender in Las Vegas competition. First, I speak with Juanita Aiello.
So we're here at the Las Vegas Best Bartender competition. And it's, we're on the rooftop of the Commonwealth. Right now the misters are going. The sun has gone down, so it's not as hot. The crowd is picking up. Spirits are high. What do you think about this?
It's picking up. I think it's nice. Got the big wigs here. People are happy. The drinks are good.
Yeah, I really like the Rebel, the Running Rebel.
Yes.
I think that was the name of the drink. Just Bulls, Geneva, raspberry, reduction, and a little lemon. It's
very
perfect.
Good. Perfect. Perfect summer drink.
And that raspberry garnish, huh?
Lots of antioxidants.
Yes, man. I need my vitamins. Right on. Adam Raines, Las Vegas Cocktail Weekly. We're here at the Best Bartender in Las Vegas competition. I'm here with writer Mitchell Wilburn. What's going on, brother?
Nothing much. Just chilling out, enjoying some good cocktails.
Yeah, man. Which one was your favorite so far?
I gotta say, I didn't get to try Kevin Gorham's Siren Seduction. It looked really good with that Sauvignon Blanc in it, but I really loved the Sipping on Geneva and Juice by my boy Tim Weigel.
That one was tasty.
It seriously was. It was so drinkable. Had a good little bit of spice to it. The bowls really came out. The sweetness and the juniper of the bowls was really the star of that one.
Yeah, I mean, I love all these bartenders. All four of them are the men, essentially. But the Fountain of Youth might have been my favorite. I don't know, that the creamy mouthfeel from the strawberry yogurt with the effervescence. I don't know, something about it. Maybe someone said strawberry quick, and I don't know if that's good or bad, but I still dug it.
I can see the strawberry quick, but you know, when I heard about that Bowles yogurt, I couldn't think of a good cocktail anywhere in my mind. But you know what? You know what, Roger? He really pulled that one out. He chose a tough ingredient. And he really knocked it out of the park there.
Yeah, it's good times. Thank you, bro.
Thank you.
We're at the Best Bartender in Vegas competition. I'm here with the infamous Roger Gross.
It's rolling quite well. The good news is I just sold out of my drink. These are the last six. An excellent little cocktail called the Fountain of Youth. What we have is Bulls Yogurt, which is a great new product coming out. A fresh strawberry puree, Damrak juniper and citrus flavored vodka. Because if you say gin, the chicks won't order it. So it's all part of the plan.
Yeah.
We're shaking that and pouring that into some Virgil's green soda. Everybody's happy. We're just having a great time. I couldn't be here with the great, it's plastic. Some great competition with Tim, Kevin, and Mike. It's just been a great opportunity to hang out with my pals and do something that we all love and share together.
That's what it's all about.
Next up, the Arawak cocktail from Gazregan's Joy Mixology.
Edgar était un vrai saoulon, il écrivait toute la journée, il n'écrivait pas de chansons, mais des contes où l'assassin l'emportait.
So, we're drinking right now, cocktail number 17 from Gazregan's Joy Mixology. We just recorded another video for Mixology Made Simple's YouTube channel. It's Raul's mission to recreate the entire book, right?
Yep. This is my Bible, man. This is what I like to use as my definitive answer of how to make a cocktail. I look it up here first and go, okay, what is this? All right, let's find out how Gaz made it. You know, I usually go to Gaz and then the Bar Smarts Cats. That's kind of my final word on how shit should be done.
What about that Union bartending book?
So what did you have next going on with the podcast?
So this cocktail, we found it finishes dry, and just so everyone knows the ingredients, it's a bourbon, dry vermouth, pineapple, angostura, and a little tamarind juice.
And it looks, it's garnished with pineapple, so it looks like it's going to be really sweet, or it looks like it's at least going to have that sweetness.
A tropical vibe, yeah, or something.
Right, right. And it has sweet elements to it, but then you drink it, that dry vermouth and the bourbon just dries out your mouth. It just finishes.
But it's intriguing. I want to drink it more. You know what I mean? I want to drink it. I want to figure it out. You know what I mean? Palate's like, do I like this? I don't know yet. But I definitely want to try it again. So perhaps I do like it. Might have something to do with the 2 ounces of Woodford in there.
Exactly. A cocktail with mystery. You gotta love it.
Yeah.
Next up, our featured interview with Elaine Higgins from Remy V.
Again, this is Adam Raines with Las Vegas Cocktail Weekly. I'm here with Elaine Higgins. She came all the way out from New York City talking about Remy's new product. I have it in my hand right now. I'm enjoying it. It's fresh, clean, bit of fruitiness. Could you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure, happy to. So we're introducing this week Remy Martin V to the city of Las Vegas. V stands for life in French, and Remy Martin V is actually an eau de vie, which is a traditional French spirit that has been consumed for centuries and enjoyed by the French. We decided to bring that taste to America. So Remy Martin V, it's a clear spirit, but it has a lot of, it's made from grapes, distilled twice. We distill it small batches, you know, almost like you might be used to in some of the scotches or some of the bourbons. But the grapes, as they go through this slow distillation process, the taste of the grapes is really left inside the spirit. So you have this beautiful aroma, grapey, a little bit of mint, a little bit of melon, and makes an amazing experience. You can try it on the rocks, or we tend to see it in a lot of cocktails that are becoming quite interesting with eau de vie.
Right, that does make sense because, I mean, I think the market's been oversaturated with vodka, and people's tastes are expanding a little bit, and why not eau de vie? You know, it's like you said, it's fresh and clean, but it does have that grapey, fruity quality. It's great.
And it's also natural. I mean, it's great that vodkas are experiencing this great explosion, but the fruitiness of some of the vodkas are very sweet. They're not natural. There's lots of sugar in the flavored vodkas. And
yeah,
I think
whatnot, what have you.
But I think this is a chance to almost experience the grape throughout its life cycle, right? Sometimes we can have it in wine, and eau de vie is just this simple, distilled, beautiful, fresh product. And then, of course, you can try it in cognacs or other sorts of things that are aged. So it's an interesting way to experience grapiness in fantastic cocktails. I was at several fantastic spots on the strip last night where key people were mixing up some amazing drinks with Remy Martin V.
Ooh, it's exciting. And so is it the same grapes as cognac, Uni Blanc?
Yes, they're Uni Blanc grapes, and they are all from the vineyards of Remy Martin. So really high quality, specialized grapes, very flavor filled. Those tiny little green grapes that are beautiful from the vineyards of France.
Beautiful. And what are some of the cocktails you had? If you can remember.
Well, always drink responsibly. Yes, of course I can remember. So I had something beautiful with sage and chartreuse, another old French spirit of choice. And so that was really interesting. It had a little sweet, and then also that herbiness does really well. Another beautiful cocktail was with muddled cherries and lime juice. So Remy V seems to do pretty well with either herbaceous mixers and also citrus mixers. And if you want something easy, right, we all sound like at home we always make fancy cocktails, but we know it's not true. We just open the fridge and pick out one ingredient, right? And so pineapple juice is sort of the signature drink. It's V and pineapple, and we just call it the VIP. It's easy to remember, V, ice, and pineapple. So the recipe is in the name.
And I can see throwing some bubbles. And
there you go. You're happy. You're good. It's easy. It's refreshing. And, you know, it's hot in the summer, so it's a good drink.
Well, awesome, Lynn. Thanks for talking.
Yeah, anytime. Appreciate it.
coming up, our answer to the mystery cocktail. Answer to the mystery cocktail is the Brandy Crusta. The ingredients in the Brandy Crusta are 2 ounces brandy or cognac would be nice, 1 teaspoon of Grand Marnier, 1 teaspoon of Maraschino, 1/2 teaspoon of simple syrup, 2 teaspoons of lemon juice, and 2 dashes bitters. I've heard Boker's bitters will be best with this one, and as well as a lemon peel. Traditionally, we'll stir all the ingredients together with ice, then strain into a chilled wine glass. Line it with a wide zest of a lemon, spirally cut from about 1/2 of a lemon, with a sugar rim. As David Wondrich says, excellence has never been easy, so this one's worth the work, and it's still not that bad. Enjoy. Cheers.
Trying to capture the shaking noise.
And my constant swearing. When I make cocktails, I get very upset. I get very frustrated.
Because they don't come out the way I want it.
So, Raul, what are you pouring for us?
This is the Sonoran Summer Spice, and I'm putting on the elderflower big peppercorn foam.
It's good, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
That's good, and the creaminess. Got my mustache, which I always like.
Got that cucumber right on the top.
And what's in this cocktail? You don't have to give the exact proportion.
No, go ahead. It's the Bombay Sapphire, agave syrup, muddled sage, fresh lemon, Pichot's bitters. Muddle the sage a little bit, shake it up, pour it in there, and then it's a elderflower, cucumber, and a little bit of a peppercorn syrup foam. So pepper, elderflower, and cucumber foam.
And you really don't hide that gin in there. You can.
Oh, it's 2.5 ounces of gin, so
this will
make you happy.
Makes me happy. Hey, so I thank everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this another episode of Las Vegas Cocktail Weekly. Thanks to Ralph Ari of Mixology Made Simple.
Thanks for hanging out, man.
And thanks, Daniel Kevini.
Kevini, yes.
I'm horrible with last names. I can't.
Not to worry. It's been butchered more than a number of times, but thank you for having me.
It's awesome. We'll see you next time, guys. Adios, and stay tuned for the extras afterwards. Thanks Lynn Higgins, thanks Devorah Gray, Tracy Higgins too is in the mix, appreciate it, thanks Heidi, and stay tuned, we'll be doing some Negroni tasting, sake tasting, and some audio that I couldn't put in, and please excuse that the audio is somewhat spotty, too spotty for me to actually put on the regular part of the program, but that's why they're extras, you don't have to listen. But also thanks all the best bartenders in Vegas for our good team, Keith, everybody, Mike Reyes, Anthony Pullen. We're gonna have a program where we put all you guys on at once. It's gonna be crazy. And yeah, I'll listen to some Negroni drinking.
The culmination of this episode is from the last episode. We're all threw in his Negroni into the barrel. But this isn't your run-of-the-mill Negroni, of course. For those who didn't listen last week, Ralph, last month, I should say. Ralph, what did you do this Negroni?
Well, to make it a little different, you know, it is a barrel-aged Negroni, but there's people doing those out there anyway. What I did is I took just a simple Martini Rossi sweet vermouth, and I heated it up just a little bit and ran it through some coffee. So kind of French pressed the coffee or the sweet vermouth through it, and then I threw it in with the barrel aging and strained out the coffee grounds, of course. So it's almost like a coffee-infused sweet vermouth. So it's a Beefeater, gin, Campari, and the coffee sweet vermouth that I'm hoping that being in the barrel will take away some of that the bitter coffee notes that were there, which were good at the beginning. And I'm curious to see how the wood changes, because I was cool with the coffee and the Campari, and you know, it was very like, you know, like an espresso and a lemon peel or something, you know what I mean? It just had that the real nice bitterness to it. But I want to see what the wood's going to do. Is it going to chill it out? What's it going to do?
This is a 5 liter.
I believe so,
5 liter barrel. So it's smaller. And then, of course, with our climate here in Vegas, the Angel Share is going to be a little bit more. It's a little bit, gets a little bit hot here in Las Vegas, in case you haven't been here.
I tried this earlier today without the ice, without, you know, the orange zest, just as a little taste straight off the barrel, and it was definitely drinkable. It did take the bitter away from the coffee. I mean, even being as warm as 90 some odd degrees in there, it was still all right, just a sip, so. I'm really getting that coffee now. Now that it's mellowed out with the ice, you really get that coffee. It's not just an after note, it's really forward in there.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You definitely get the coffee. And you get a fun burn.
See, warm right off the spigot warm, it was more of an aftertaste of the coffee, believe it or not. But once you chill it out, it's all incorporated in there.
Excellent. So I'm very excited because I love me a Negroni. Mm-hmm. Yeah, on the nose, it's the coffee is very faint on the nose.
Yeah, it didn't smell too much on the nose.
And you get, you know, you use Carpano Tica, right? Tica formula, vermouth?
No.
No.
Nope.
What did you eat?
You just fucking Martini Rossi.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Guess you don't need it, because I get the coffee, and then, like, you know.
And
like,
sometimes you can polish a turd, you know what I mean? Yeah. You do at the pub with the vanilla.
Right. Yeah, because I get that. Well, I mean, the orange zest is forward, because you express the oils beautifully on top. So I'm getting, like, the orange, you know, on the background. Well, let's just taste it. Fuck the nose. No. I'll edit that out. I'm trying to stop these F-bombs.
Inhale as you drink.
Trying to stop the F-bombs, you better stop drinking them.
This is a drinking podcast.
Are you afraid the minors who listen to the Las Vegas Cocktail Week are going to be upset?
No, it's just more professional. If I can hold back the F-bombs, you know what I'm saying? Like for your videos.
What was that there?
That's true.
Yeah.
What's up?
What was that then?
Agave syrup. Malagro. Tequila. I think they did agave syrup.
Oh, syrup. All right.
But no, it's complex. Beautiful. Coffee.
Now, using this versus a simple syrup, how do you cut it? Normal simple syrup is 1-to-1.
Right. The agave syrup is it's almost like a honey syrup, like a thicker honey syrup.
Yeah. So
I just used a little bit less.
So
whereas
like
you would use
less,
1 ounce. Yeah. Okay. 1 ounce of simple syrup, I would cut it down to a half, because that's what I did on this recipe.
And by the way, right now we're Raul's riffing on another cocktail. This one is for the upcoming Bombay Sapphire competition. So we're not going to give up all the secrets right now. But so you know, he's building some herbs in there. There's some agave nectar. And we're going to see how this one turns out.
Yes, once I get my facial fingers, I'm going to hope I put it. I think it's inside the house. Oh, everything's always in the house. Okay, hold on.
Yes, it's where it's
I thought
started.
I brought it out here, didn't I? Yeah, the Komoto is surprisingly smooth for what it is. It's wild lactic bacteria. And in sake, they introduce a stable lactic bacteria to the batch to get it to go, to the moto, to the starter, where they have the koji mo. But with the Komoto, they would sit there and ram it with these poles, and then the bacteria in the air would help the mold propagate, and they would add that to the sake and get it going. So
ramming with a pole to propagate sounds kinky. Sorry to go there already.
It always goes to the wiener jokes, folks. Yeah.
It's early in the podcast for that, sorry. And where did you find this sake?
The sake comes to us from Sake One, from the Toji Club. So you sign up with them, and then they'll send you different sake every other 2 months, you know, depending on what level you want to join. The Toji Club costs like $70, but then they send you rare imports from Japan, you know, their selections, and then stuff straight from the Kura, because we're going to taste the Namachozo, which is an unpasteurized sake. So it's only been, normally sake is pasteurized twice. This one's only been pasteurized once, so it went through the line and then was left unpasteurized, and then in the bottle they just get a quick pasteurization on this one. So it's called Namachozo. Chozo means stored, so this was stored as pasteurized sake, or awesome. Unpasteurized sake. So it's a little more lively.
And so this one that we're tasting right now,
that is the Komoto.
The Komoto, I said it right?
Yep,
Komoto. Komoto. Yeah. I think it's like what a spirit should be, because it's delicate, it's light, but it coats the palate, and the finish is there. Like, I'm tasting it now. I've been drinking it in like a minute, and it's still there.
Well, it's interesting, too, because normally Komotos and Yamahai, which is the other type of wild lactic bacteria sake, where they do not use the poles, they're usually a little wilder, a little gamier, but these guys have been making it since 1725, this kura, the Kasumi Tsuru kura, and they've been making it, yeah. So for a long time, so they know how to make this stuff. So pretty rocking. I thought I would share that with you, Jim.
That's awesome.
Very
that's
excited.
Delicious.
This one, it's a little... Okay. I'm going to say the one we just tried here, it's a little weird in that it's one of the selections they send you from the Kura. So you could go to sake1.com and then check out their selections. I don't know if this is going to be on there like that. This is only if you're a member of their club. So they send you, they make it, because Namazake is hard to send out because it's unpasteurized and it's very fickle. It has to be kept refrigerated, it has to be kept out of light, or it's going to go crazy. So
especially in this hot desert climate.
Right. So this one is, like I said, it's a Namachozo, so it's sort of like half Nama, half unpasteurized. But so it is called the Momokawa Limited Edition Junmai Ginjo. That's what it says on the bottle, but it doesn't say anything about Namachozo on there. It only says it in your... a literature that they send you with it, that they just threw the Namachozo in this because they don't normally sell it. But anyway, you can still get their full-blown Namazake on their list. But anyway, yeah, this one, for me, you know, when I smelt it, the aroma on it for me was, I had faint anise, bold aromas of honeydew melon, ripe citrus, and for me it was just slightly Galliano-like. Like, a little, I was smelling it, I was like, what the hell is that? And I was like, oh, kind of Galliano, maybe, you know, because it's like the kind of citrusy anise thing going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I tasted it, it was like clean, lush cucumber water, and then it was a very soft mouthfeel. You know, it didn't, like, it wasn't harsh in any way. And then, you know, it finishes slightly astringent with a dry, kind of faint citrus peel, and it's a long finish for me.
I think those tasting notes are right on. Like, it's 12 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
glass honeydew melon all the way.
Yeah.
All the way.
That was the sweetness that's smooth.
It's a lot of common, like, sake notes in general. I find a lot of ripe tropical fruit. There's star fruit flavor in there. Like, when you bite into a star fruit, that kind of dry fruit, almost a little bit of citrus in there, is often found. Ripe banana, mangoes, pineapples, all that kind of stuff. And that's mainly because of the yeast that they use.
Mm-hmm.
Those are those fruit esters that
the
you get in there. But yeah, and then the lush water, because the water is so important. This is about 24% alcohol by volume, so water. You know what I mean? So Niigata is the most famous sake prefecture, and that water is pristine, clean, beautiful water. So when you taste the Niigata sake, it's just like just lush water overflowing all over your place. You know what I mean? It's just all over your palate, just like water, water, water. And that's kind of what I often find with sake, is just the cucumbers and the ripe tropical fruits often. And then some will have citrus that they have especially the namas will kind of usually have a really bold flavor.
Yeah, there's like, on that finish, like you said, like citrus peel, almost slight, like you said, astringent, slight, not exactly bitter, but.
See, like when mixing cocktails, I had a mixologist was asking me, hey, I'm trying to make something with Galliano, what would you recommend? And I recommended a nama. Because, Galliano is going to beat up any sake. It's so powerful. But I was like, a nama is pretty bright. It can kind of stand up to that. So if you did like a 1 ounce on Galliano, 2 ounce on this, and then, played with some other stuff, that'd be a good foundation for playing with it. That's why I want sake to kind of break out of its sushi-only shell and get out into just being used. Why not? It's 24% alcohol by volume. It can calm down a spirit that's too hot. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, they... Like, the marketers created a market for Galliano back in the day. Sake is, not the Galliano, I'm not beating up on Galliano, because anise flavors,
It does have a unique place, though.
It does, yeah, like Freddy Pucker. I mean, it's just fun to say. Harvey Wallbanger, all those are fun to say. I haven't had one that I really liked, but then again, I haven't gone to a good place and asked for one.
I also haven't tried the Galliano on its own, just to try the flavors on its own either. So
I did a cocktail for the one of the Galliano win a bike competitions or whatever. They were giving out these Galliano bikes, and you had to be a LA resident, but I entered anyway. And I did cucumber water, a little bit of cream, and then Galliano and vanilla vodka. So it was called a melon parfait cocktail. Because, that's like an Italian thing, right? But the Galliano and the melon ice cream is some shit. Something like that, right? I don't know.
There's so many regions.
I'm asking my Italy expert, Adam Rains.
Every region does their own thing.
Inconclusive.
So,
yes.
Si. Va bene.
There you go.
Like mama used to mix.
Yes. Everyone in Italy drinks melon parfait.
Raul is so big in Italy right now.
Yep, I'm a rock star over there. Everybody in England wears our pub uniform. Look it up online, people. You'll see what I'm talking about.
Skinny jeans and spiked suspenders.
It's the official uniform of everyone in London.
Well, awesome, man. Thanks for letting us taste that. Just in case you're hearing in the background, it is... July almost in Las Vegas, so we have a fan going. So if you hear any ambient noise, that's what it is.
Should have been more creative.
You
should have said we're filming this on the back of a truck. It sounds like a movie, you know what I mean? Come on, man.
No, it is 100.
We're on the Las
plus.
Vegas Cocktail Weekly Mobile.
Oh yes. I forgot.
We're broadcasting live from atop Mount Rushmore. That's the wind you're hearing behind
there you
us.
Go, creative.
I'm like, damn, I just had to dodge a stripper. Shit, there's another one. Oh no, what was that? It's sticky.
Broadcasting to you live from atop the Eiffel Tower in Paris. Yeah. You can hear the wind whistling behind us.
It's like a hairdryer.
My hair's dry.
The legendary French fan winds. This one, it's a little... Okay. I'm going to say the one we just tried.
...board for the next podcast. Tim, what's going on?
We're making some bowls, cocktails. It's a little bit warm out here tonight. We're rocking and rolling. And,
what are you throwing down?
Right now, I'm making the Fountain of Youth for my friend Sergio here. This is rocking cocktail, a great summer cocktail. Fruity, strawberry, with some bowls, yogurt, and tamarack gin.
I am protein.
Yeah, so the good thing is that it'll be it's only gonna get cooler, especially as the drinks go down. Yeah, hey man, you're a great interview, even under pressure. But there's no pressure here. Just doing what we do.
Doing what we do. I'm doing
what we love. Hell yeah, man. So, you're from Massachusetts. You used to work at a historic bar in Boston.
I worked at the oldest restaurant in America, the Union Oyster House. Actually, my last day working there, it was dubbed a National Historic Monument. Had a whole bunch of people there, and that was on my last day of work there. Cool little family. It's just a little family. I think only six people. It opened in 1826, and I think only six owners have been there. So I mean, it goes from cradle to grave. Absolutely. And wow. The history that's involved with it. The Massachusetts Spy, the very first newspaper, was printed there in that building. One of the French kings, I can't remember his name right at this point, but he was exiled back to America, and he stayed up in the attics of the Union Oyster House. The toothpick, it was kind of developed over there. I mean, Harvard students started picking their teeth at the dinner table, which back then it wasn't too privy to do, but the people, common people, started seeing people in suits, Harvard people, picking their teeth at the dinner table with pieces of wood. Well, kind of went on from there, somebody that saw it in Africa somewhere, I think it was in Trinidad, Africa, that it was first brought forth.
The toothpick?
Yeah, the toothpick.
Oh, so then they brought it there.
They brought it over there, and they started doing it over there, so it was a very historic place over there that I very much enjoyed working at.
Oh, that's cool. So dental health and hygiene could be attributed to your old spot.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely not in England.
No.
They're girls.
I cannot.
Why?
Jeez.
So we're talking a little bit about the Union right now.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. The ambient noise is good. I might not use it. Whatever. So what do you guys think the Union could do
better?
Like as far as training bartenders and...
embrace the Bar Smarts program. Make them do wire, have them test on it.
Not only that, maybe set up a mock bar and try to get them to start pouring.
And have the liquor companies come in and sponsor the product. It's fine. If we're learning about vodka drinks, who gives a shit if it's fucking Belvedere? And the Belvedere person says, who gives a fuck, whatever. I want to be able to make drinks. You know what I mean? I want to be able to get my hands dirty and touch it.
Yeah.
I don't want bottles full of water or whatever and talk about stuff. You need to get your hands in it. To figure it out.
My first bartending class was the ABC bartending class. And take the good and the bad away from that, but the good that I took away from that was that they actually had you pour. They had you mixing the cocktails, and they had you in a club atmosphere with the loud music and all that. They didn't do too much background. They just taught you the cocktails and taught you the bar atmosphere. Then I went to the Union bartending class, and it covered everything else. It covered that background, where the rum came from, what the areas of cognac, and all the other background of where all your shit knowledge comes from.
Right.
So the combination of the two really, really worked out for me. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, because even they know their drawbacks and their weaknesses. Like they say, play devil's advocate. They say that. If you're bartending right now, that's when you get your on the job experience. That's what they say.
Mm-hmm.
So, I could see that. I think they should have continuation of education as well. Like they should have after 5 years, after you're vested or to become vested, maybe have them take bar sports or create their own curriculum with an advanced.
But that's where the guild comes in. So once you're done with your Union class. They should have the guild should come in there and say, everybody, we have free memberships, congratulations on fucking graduating. Here's your first year, it's on us, after that it's $100 a year, whatever. We're gonna continue education and parties, da 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 da. Make their pitch there at the class. Why not? you have a ton of people, but
Right.
You know.
I'm gonna try to make it work if I can. I mean
that's
I don't have time to talk to the union guys. But yeah, I'll talk to Andrew and then talk to the new lead instructor, Richard.
I want
to
put it out on Pulse, you know what I mean? And put that idea out there on Pulse, and then so that kind of gets the conversation started, whether they want to or not.
Right.
So that's what I think.
Good.
Me, you, Gene, because we're all kind of supporters of that.
I talked to Andrew quite a bit too, because he's hand in hand with the new project. So.
Right. Yeah. He's a good guy. Anyhow, yeah. I think all the, especially those old school bartenders that just lose their way, like, they should be made to, like, re-examine why they're in the job and why they love the job, if nothing else. You know, like, you might not teach an old dog new tricks, but if you can teach that dog to do his old tricks enthusiastically, you're, like, 10 times better. You know, you're not giving the union a bad name. I think they have to know that ball sack, I said it, sorry for the language, I'm trying to make it a point on the podcast to not drop as many F-bombs in the anyhow, if they have that many ball sacks, and you could say union turds, behind the bar, that just makes the union look bad, and as I am pro-union all the way, but unions are losing strength all over the country, for many reasons, but I don't want to see happen in Vegas.
Yeah.
Serve a drink with a genuine smile. And, I mean, I know it can get monotonous, but shit, that's what bartending's all about.
Yeah, you have the best job in the world.
It's a passion career.
Yeah. So, hopefully, I mean, because, like, for me going to Bar Smarts, you know, like you said, you've been buying the bar 15 years, I've been buying the bar for 12 years. That was another thing. I already had my passion back. Like, I lost it for a little bit. That I had my passion back, but that reinvigorated just seeing those guys, you know, like Steve Olson, just emphatically just talking about, like, it's all about the guests, you know, just like all those guys are just so happy, just so stoked to be doing what they're doing. And, like, it's hard not to, like, just beat up them.
With me, every single event that I go to with the Bartenders Guild, every single event that they put out there, even if it is sponsored or not sponsored by the guild, because they put everything out there. That's what re-inspires me, because, let's be real, I've been stuck in service wells most of my career, and that can just get monotonous. Yeah, you're not dealing with the guests. You're not being that rock star on that big stage anymore, you know? And but I'm re-inspired every time I go to one of these events. It's one of the best $100 I ever spent. It's awesome.
All right, so we're going to do another cocktail for Mixology Made Simple. What are we going to be doing next?
We're going to be doing the Apricot Fizz.
Beautiful.
Indeed.
Check it out on the YouTube channel.